Welcome to the Cold Brew Podcast. I'm Dave Gasper, joined as always by Matt Carroll. We are the editors at ReviewingTheBrew.com. We got a great show lined up. We're going to be talking some bold predictions. We're going to be talking opening day roster. It could have been a better show as we record here on Thursday night if we had had a game today on opening day. It's March 28th, 2024. It should be opening day, but instead I am wearing my opening day should be a national holiday shirt because number Agreed. One, it should be, but you know, everyone else, at least the Brewers and the Mets got the day off of work here on opening day because it's raining in New York and they did not build a roof on that stadium. And we don't have baseball until Friday here.
Absolutely ridiculous. I do like how your little scrolly thing at the bottom says happy opening day 2024, even though it's not for us.
As the people are listening to this and watching this podcast, though, it is opening day.
Yeah.
So happy opening day, everybody.
That's very true. That's very true by the time people hear it. Yeah, that's a fact. So yes, at this point, happy opening day. I had seen a stat the other day where someone compiled the percentage of times that certain teams with domed stadiums had actually played opening day, like opening day at home. And I can't remember how many years it was over, but the Brewers were at like 42% or something like that. Like the Brewers have a freaking roof. And yet MLB insists on not having them start the season at home where you have a guaranteed game that will actually happen. Like and on top of that, they play in the north, like where it's cold and potentially snowy, and I guess maybe in terms of tailgate experience, but we know Wisconsinites, people are going to come out anyway for opening day. It's not like you're saving any
but it's like we have opening day in Chicago, like on the north side of Chicago. It's like, really?
Right.
Really? It's always miserable playing in March and April in Chicago. Why are they getting opening day, like the opening day there, and the Brewers are always stuck playing them, when it's like we could be playing this in Milwaukee where we have a roof and it'll be nice and like 68 degrees inside. It'll be dry. It's not going to be overly windy. No one's going to be miserable. But no, instead, like last year, it had to be in Chicago. Now this year, they're going all the way out to New York to play the Mets, and it's miserable over there. And even when we do have the game here on Friday, it's supposed to be super windy. It's going to be nicer weather, you know, no rain, you know, things like that. But it's going to be windy, so that's going to be hell for either the pitchers or the hitters, depending on which direction it's going.
Yeah, exactly. I guess trying to move teams out of the north to, like, not have them play in the cold conditions, it's New York, it's in the north. So, like, that doesn't even – the fact that the home opener or that the opening day was there – even the regionality doesn't make sense as to why they would constantly not have opening day games in Milwaukee where you have a roof, but whatever. Yeah,
I mean, everyone needs their own opening day here, like early on, like even everyone in the cold weather without the roof over it, they all are going to end up needing their opening days at some point here, but you know, they could have it the second series where you'd be at least a little bit more likely, I would assume, to have better weather. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is at this point. It got rained out, so the game got pushed to Friday here. So we'll have an early Friday game. But we got baseball. We got regular season baseball, finally. And the Brewers have made their opening day roster. They have announced that. And some interesting decisions in the final spots, as there was a lot of injuries here too over the past week that made some of those decisions a little bit easier, including Garrett Mitchell suffering a hand injury. He is going to be out for the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season with a fracture in his hand. Just a really terrible break for Mitchell. Obviously, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know we're big fans of Garrett Mitchell, but It's just so tough with he's supposed to be the starting center fielder this year, and he suffers yet another injury early on in the year. And hand injuries, Matt, for hitters, they're not easy to come back from. I mean, those hand injuries can linger And even when you're fully healthy and the fracture is healed, it can still take a while before you're back to where you were before.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those where, unless they're, you know, like the full breaks, the major ones, they can be tricky because you try and, you know, have a guy come back from it because it's not like the more serious breaks or fractures. So you try and have them rehab and work through it and do those things. And then they can be those things that nag. They can be the ones that, you know, take a little bit longer to come back from. Just frustrating and unfortunate for a guy who just went through almost an entire season of injury, ready to finally play again, someone who the Brewers want to lean heavily upon outside of, you know, Jackson Churio, arguably the outfielder that maybe, you know, a lot of the Brewers front office feel the most strongly about. It's why he was the first of all of these guys, like we mentioned before, to get that major league debut, because the Brewers really, really do believe in Garrett Mitchell. But you get the best ability is availability, and Garrett Mitchell is kind of fighting that a little bit right now. Hopefully this is, you know, luckily, yes, not that 6 to 8 weeks is anything to sneeze at, but it could have been a lot more serious of an injury, and hopefully he gets past it and is fine for the most part going forward. But I really hope at some point he doesn't end up catching the classic injury prone tag, because he's certainly starting to kind of trend that way at this point.
Yeah, he is. And it's very unfortunate, unfortunate for the Brewers and unfortunately for Mitchell. But yeah, luckily he does not need to undergo surgery for this injury. Sal Frelick, when he injured his thumb last year, he needed surgery. He was still out for probably a similar time frame, but just avoiding having to go under the knife, I think is definitely good news for Mitchell. But we're not going to see him until late May, early June. You know, it's going to be around Memorial Day before Mitchell is going to be ready to go. That's definitely a tough break for the Brewers. But luckily, they are pretty loaded in the outfield. They got Jackson Churio, who's made the opening day roster. They got Christian Yelich. Sal Frelick is obviously still here. And Frelick, he was slated to spend a lot more time at third base this year, but now Frelick is probably going to be moving more full-time back to the outfield. Murphy, though, he said it might be more like a platoon out there in center field, with Sal Frelick playing against righties and Blake Perkins hitting against lefties in this platoon, as Jackson Churio is going to spend most of his time out in right field. But Matt, to me, the idea of platooning such a talented hitter like Sal Frelick with a light hitter like Blake Perkins, it just seems weird to me. You know, unless against lefties, Sal Frelick is playing third base, and that way he's still in there just about every single day. But for me, I'd rather have Frelick in there every single day than having him split time with Blake Perkins. Now, if it was Joey Weimer, who rakes against lefties, that he was splitting time with, that I could see making a whole lot of sense. But Blake Perkins, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. That's what I would prefer, as well as get. I mean, again, Sal Frelick, like Garrett Mitchell, he's a first-round pick. He's a guy that you want to give a lot of playing time to. He's a guy, another one that the Brewers, especially Murphy himself, feels very strongly about in his abilities and the ways that he can kind of impact the team. Excuse me. Tells me a couple things about Blake Perkins, I guess, and the situation. For one, they want to at least give Murphy, at least wants to give platooning a shot. Now, that was of a lot of the things that, you know, Brewers fans, and rightly so a lot of times, criticized the former manager, Craig Counsell, about, as good as he was that he was really stubborn about platooning a lot of times. And Murphy, it looks like, is going to start off this way. It'll be real interesting to see whether or not he continues doing that, depending on what results kind of end up showing, based, you know, depending on how Blake Perkins does. But it also goes to show really how much they value, and they've said it before, how much they value Blake Perkins' defense. Because for as light of a hitter as he is, and I don't say this lightly, he may be arguably the best defender in the outfield on the team. And that says a lot with guys like Sal Frelick, guys like Garrett Mitchell, guys like Joey Weimer, who's not with the club, but we know what his defense is, and then Jackson Churio. Blake Perkins is a very, very, very good defensive outfield to the point that at one point in 2023 in the middle, and I remember, I think had an article up about it, I can't remember, he had like the second most defensive runs saved in the outfield and had played over 100 innings less than everyone who was above him on the few people who were above him and a few people who were below him on the list. Like, he was just chalking those up like it was nothing because he is that dang good in the outfield. So, and we know how the Brewers value up the middle defense and how important it's going to be to the team this year with the starting rotation taking a little bit of a step back. But if you can't produce offensively, that's only going to carry you so far. But it explains, I feel like, to me a little bit how, why they're starting that way.
Here's the problem I have with it, though. Blake Perkins isn't a good hitter against lefties.
No, he's not.
But, like, you look at the numbers, you look at his splits from last year's, he's much better against righties than lefties. Against lefties, he had .192 with a .603 OPS. I mean, that's Blake Perkins against lefties. And now he's going to be your starter in center field against lefties. Yeah. Over Sal Frelick, who can hit just about freaking anybody. It doesn't matter, left-handed, right-handed. Like, that's what I don't get.
Right.
Like, and that's where you bring up, too, like, the previous, you know, being stuck in platoons and really wanting to go with platoons to get these guys their playing time. I mean, Sal Frelick is not a platoon-type player. Sal Frelick is an everyday player.
Yep.
Garrett Mitchell, when healthy, is an everyday player. Bryce Terang should be an everyday player. I mean, the whole sitting guys versus, you know, versus lefties or whatever it is, how do you expect them to be good against lefties? How do you expect them to be everyday players if you won't let them face them? How are they going to get better if they don't get the experience against lefties? That's a major issue I have with what the Brewers have done. And, I mean, Frelick, his numbers last year against lefties weren't particularly great. I mean, he had a .184, .569 OPS against lefties. So not exactly much better. It's actually slightly worse than Blake Perkins against lefties. But still, Frelick got fewer at-bats against him, too. Blake Perkins had 52 at-bats against lefties last year. And Blake Perkins had – Blake Perkins had 52 at-bats against lefties. Sal Frelick had 38 against them. It's not a large sample size either way, but from what we've seen from these guys in the minor leagues, from what we've seen from Sal Frelick in the minors, it didn't matter right or left. He'd be able to hit them. And how do you expect him to be that in the major leagues if you don't let him hit against lefties? I mean, you don't know. It's not like he's a six-year veteran that's like, you know, he can't hit lefties by now. You need to give them the chance. Like if you're going to be developing these kids and you want them to be everyday players, like you say you do, let them hit against lefties. Stop platooning them. Stop platooning Sal Frelick. Stop platooning Bryce Terang. Stop platooning Joey Weimer or Garrett Mitchell. Or don't platoon Jackson Churio, for the love of God. Like, just put them out there. Let them hit. Let them get the at-bats under their belt and learn.
Yeah. Yeah, of all the people, good Lord, if we're platooning Jackson Churio, then what are we even doing? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that they won't do that, but you never know. At one point, we weren't even 100% certain that he was going to make the opening day roster, but
yeah,
obviously that ended up working out. So, yeah, like I said, I mean, you can make that same argument either way, like you said, towards or against. Sal Frelick and Blake Perkins in terms of these small sample sizes. We only know so much about what Blake Perkins might be able to do in a platoon based off of his sample size. Same with Sal Frelick, but Sal Frelick is the one with the recent first round pedigree. So he's the one, he's going to be, you know, one of the future faces of franchise at some point. Blake Perkins isn't going to be here. He's not, the Brewers aren't going to be signing him to any extension or anything, you know, once it's time for Perkins to go. So I totally agree. I would rather see Frelick get that time, let him figure it out, unless they want him to just get comfortable in his one area of the platoon first, make sure that he feels good about himself, and then move him on to full time. I don't know. This is the thing. Like, I know what we've been used to with Council, and it feels at the beginning, at the very least, like it's starting off the same with Murphy, but we don't know that it'll continue that way. We don't know necessarily that he won't have a quicker hook than Council did for a platoon when he either sees one guy doing better than the other, or just in general wanting to switch things up because it's just not working out his plan at the start. We don't know. It's going to be something to follow this year and see what his tendencies are, and I look forward to it. And hey, maybe Blake Perkins surprises us. I don't know. It's
Yeah.
happened before. Colin Ray
Maybe
surprised us last year.
Kesson Hira will all of a sudden hit lefties. I mean, Craig Counsell stuck to it on Kesson Hira being up there against lefties despite him being absolutely terrible against them.
But Craig Council isn't
But
here.
that's true. He is not. He is not anymore. He abandoned us. As Tiki Barber would say, you're dead to me. But yeah. Tiki Barber. So that's the outfield situation. You got four outfielders: Yelich, Cheerio, Frelick, and Blake Perkins. Joey Weimer being optioned down to AAA Nashville. He's going to get some at bats under his belt with that new swing setup, and hopefully he can get himself into a rhythm, and maybe he'll come up and take Blake Perkins' spot, or whatever. In the infield, couple of interesting choices. When we were making our predictions, we thought Monasterio would be the odd man out. We also thought Perkins would be the odd man out as well. But I did think Weimer could potentially get some more time down there. But either way, Monasterio, he made the cut. Joey Ortiz made the cut. Eric Haas did not. They're on the catcher side. And because Gary Mitchell got hurt, that opened up another spot that went to Oliver Dunn, who was already reassigned to minor league camp, but the Brewers instead decided to call upon him. And Oliver Dunn makes the 26-man roster as the last man on the team. But Andrew Monasterio is there. Joey Ortiz is there and Dunn. And you got a lot of third base options and a pretty deep infield group now with the roster that the Brewers are carrying. But I think the big thing is that Eric Haas, who hit 395 with a 1333 OPS with five homers in spring training, did not make the opening day roster. And Matt, on one hand, I'm a little surprised based on his numbers, but on the other hand, once Gary Sanchez was signed, I'm not surprised at all that this is the outcome.
Right. It was to both of us when we were, predicting him to act Haas to actually make it during some of those predictions. It was because of just not being able to deny in exactly what he did during the spring. But it's you're right. Like, it's in the end, it's not that surprising because of how rare it is to carry three catchers, especially for the Brewers. And when you have players with not a lot of flexibility. Yes, Haas can play left field, but that's Christian Yelich's spot. Like, if that's your one area of flexibility, that really in the end doesn't help you that
Brewer's got four other
much.
guys who can play that spot. Yeah.
Exactly. They truly do. And so you do have that. Combine that with the fact that spring training performances, you can only read so much from them. And I know Murphy spoke highly of Haas and talked about him as a guy that anyone should want on their team. But I can't remember if we mentioned this last week or not. Like, look just to last year and Luke Voit. Luke Voit tore it up, and everyone was saying this guy's got to make the roster. And Luke Voit was, even less guaranteed. He was on a minor league deal. Haas, he was on a very cheap major league deal, so he really wasn't that guaranteed when it came down to it. But Luke Voit fought through being on a minor league deal to make the roster, and then look at what he did during the regular season. So you really can only put so much stock into the spring. It just felt like If anyone was going to be able to overcome that, it would be Haas. In the end, he didn't, and it's understandable that he didn't. I thought maybe the fact that the Brewers still don't have a clear plan at designated hitter, they're going to rotate a bunch of guys through that position. And it's a position that they have yet to solve since it became permanent a couple years ago. I thought maybe the fact that that is an extra offensive position that you have to fill, that possibly Haas would make it there, that you could rotate Contreras and Sanchez through that DH position, and then because of that, maybe carrying a third catcher could still be an ideal thing. But in the end, it doesn't end up working out, and yeah, the spring training stats were what they were. Maybe he'll have a good year with whoever he catches on with. Maybe he actually stays with the Brewers. It's a long shot, depending on how he wants to go about it. But in the end, no more Eric Haas. So it was a fun spring story, but you move on.
Yeah, and maybe if Gary Mitchell didn't get hurt, it might have been easier to carry that third catcher, because then you could have Sal Frelick bouncing around between the infield and the outfield a lot more.
Right.
So you don't need to carry as many backup infielders. So, you know, you wouldn't necessarily need Oliver Dunn. And you'd be in a good spot where you could carry three catchers. But at the same time, I think it's a lot like football in the NFL roster, where can you carry three quarterbacks on your 53-man active roster? Pretty much no one does. You know, like, could you use one? Sure. Is anyone actually going to use that roster spot on a quarterback that they can't play anywhere else, that's likely never going to see the field, only in case of an emergency? No one's going to do that in the NFL, just like no one in baseball is going to carry three catchers on their active roster for a long period of time at all. And Pat Murphy even brought this up too. He's like, you're not going to find two teams combined that are going to break camp with three catchers. Just, right, you don't do it. And Haas, you know, as much as I was looking forward to seeing what he could do this year, as soon as Gary Sanchez was brought in, the writing was on the wall for him. And I think, right, he knew it, and he put up the best spring numbers that he could to try and prove that he could make the team. But Gary Sanchez is making more money. He's a bigger name. He has a higher ceiling, and William Contreras ain't going anywhere. So Eric Haas is left as the odd man out. He's designated for assignment. But Matt, potentially a trade could come together. You know, teams potentially needing a catcher. Maybe the Brewers could get something for him. I mean, you're out of leverage really at this point. I mean, maybe you could get a low level minor leaguer. Maybe you could get some cash, but that's really probably about it.
Yeah, exactly. It'll depend on kind of like how many of those teams put in that claim and end up trying to work something out. We are at the point now where a waiver claim would come with a potential trade. Yes, no.
If multiple teams claim them, yeah, okay. someone could try to work out a trade. They've got 7 days to trade them or for someone to claim them. So, you know, teams will put in claims. Some may want to just skip the claim process and try to trade for them. But we'll end up seeing how that goes, and we'll find out in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully they can get something for them. Hopefully they end up being able to, you know, retain him again. Like, if he goes all the way through and passes through waivers, I think maybe that tells him a little bit about what his demand is, and maybe he decides to stick with the Brewers and stay with the organization because he sees something he likes. That's certainly not something that is completely impossible to happen. It happens with, you know, plenty of players, but also he's been a major leaguer. He's going to want a job, and their catcher is a tough position to fill for a lot of teams. There's plenty of teams who end up having to get by with two guys who combine for an OPS of about 550. I would think, hopefully, although his last year was really bad.
But based on the spring numbers, someone could be like, hey, this guy's swinging a hot bat. Let's bring him in.
Right. Right, exactly. And if you're Haas, you'd think you'd want to gamble on yourself a little bit and try and get that job, because I'm sure that once he's a free agent and you don't end up having to fight other teams for him, then you've got teams really asking for your services. So I would imagine if I'm him, I try and become the free agent and see, you know, who ends up grabbing me and then try and, you know, keep my career going from there. He's not that old. He's got a lot. He's got still got time in front of him to, you know, kind of work his way back onto a roster. And I hope he does, because I enjoyed watching him this spring.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But I think also if he passes all the way through and no one claims him, he's going to be looking at a minor league deal wherever he goes. So he's going to have to start in the minor leagues wherever it is for his new team. If he signs as a free agent, most likely. And then from there, you know, really, it's just waiting for an opportunity to pop up at the major league level. And that could take some time. And the Brewers may present, you know, that kind of opportunity. Who knows what can happen at that catcher spot, because the only other catcher on the 40-man roster right now is Jefferson Caro, who obviously we both love and the Brewers love as well. But Caro's not quite ready yet. Defensively, he's ready, yes. But the Brewers want to get him more at-bats down there in AAA and get him some more experience, let that bat continue to develop. You know, let's say an injury happens here early on in the season. The Brewers probably aren't going to want to call upon Caro in April or May here. They're going to want him getting those consistent at-bats down there in the minors. And, you know, that's where they could look to someone like Haas, a major league veteran, who obviously they liked enough on a major league deal earlier in the offseason. They could call upon him if an injury happens. And he can be that bridge guy until whoever it is that's hurt gets back. We saw last year, Luis Urias got hurt on opening day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a long absence for him, and that led to Joey Weimer getting an opportunity right out of the gate, you know, after missing the opening day roster. So, you know, anything can happen with these injury spots. So, you know, if I'm Haas, I look at this where, you know, you can be that third catcher. If anything happens to Contreras or Sanchez, God forbid, you'd be the guy the organization would rather call upon than the top prospect, at least for the first probably half of the season. And they could go to you, and it'd be a better spot than going someplace else where, you know, you may be stashed behind, you know, I mean, you're going to be stashed behind two other catchers at the big league level. You're going to be down in the minor leagues anyways. You might as well be in the place where you've been learning the pitchers and getting to know them all spring training. And working with a staff and working with some guys that you know.
Yeah. At the same time, though, you do that if you're a guy like Haas, and if the injury to, you know, whatever Brewers catcher ends up being relatively minor, yeah, you get added to the 40 and called up. But then as soon as that catcher's healthy, you're kind of right back in the same place that you started. So it's all about kind of picking that, you know.
But the same could be true anyway.
Right spot. It could be. It absolutely could be. So it's just kind of, you know, do you take a minor league deal somewhere with a team that has two not great catchers and you're just waited out, but it's also an organization that isn't going anywhere, or a place like the Brewers that's relatively stable, is competitive every year, and you wait it out and see if maybe you get that chance, even for just a little bit, to get that call up and kind of start to prove yourself again. Again, you know, he's an area, he's of his career, he's young enough and he has enough upside to where he'll have some guys calling for teams, I should say, calling for his services. We'll just see where he ends up.
Yeah, and who knows, may end up being with Milwaukee. Moving on to the pitching staff here on the opening day roster. Not too much in terms of surprises. With Brandon Woodruff, Devin Williams on the injured list, Wade Miley, we knew was going to open on the injured list. Taylor Clark suffered a meniscus injury here late in spring. So that took him out of the running for the opening day bullpen. Other than that, no real surprises with this group in the rotation. You got Peralta, you got Ross, you got Ray, you got DL Hall, and you got Jacob Junis out there in the bullpen. You got Brian Hudson, Trevor McGill, Hobie Milner, Yoel Piamps, Elvis Peguero, Ebner Uribe, Tiago Vieira, and Bryce Wilson. And it's mostly chalk there. No real surprises. JB Bukauskas, who got a fourth option year, got optioned to the minor leagues. He came into the camp. We thought he'd have no minor league options left, which could give him a leg up to make the roster. But instead, they found out he's got another option left. So, sure enough, JB Bukauskas got optioned down to the minor leagues.
Yeah, he sure did. And I think what it really came down to between him and Brian Hudson is the fact that Brian Hudson is a lefty. It gives the Brewers a second lefty that they can add into that bullpen. Brian Hudson did have a very solid spring. He struck out, I think it was like 19 and 12 and a third innings or something like that. Like, he struck out a good amount of guys.
Yeah.
For a guy who doesn't necessarily throw like 99 or anything like that. But he has the type of repertoire that the Brewers like and can work with. He induces a lot of ground balls, and he could actually do some damage. He was one who I was really interested in when the Brewers originally acquired him. But at the same time, probably likely that he's, you know, being lowest man on the totem pole, it's kind of getting, you know, some of the less, the lower leverage, let's call it, situations. I could have definitely seen Bukauskas making the roster too, because he also had a good spring and the Brewers seem to really like what they see in him, with kind of what he's done to his pitch mix a little bit. But ends up being Hudson. I think the starting rotation essentially shook out exactly like everyone expected, with the exception of maybe some thought that Aaron Ashby, you know, had that chance of making it. But again, he kind of had, I don't know if it was injuries. I don't know what it was that was holding him out of games for a bit during the spring. But he'll get a chance to start in AAA and be ready for that first guy. He probably will be that first guy called up to spot start once it comes down to it, because of kind of what's developed in terms of injuries with the team.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of the big news as well. But yeah, Aaron Ashby, I think he's definitely going to be in line for that. And the Brewers just want him to get some innings under his belt, some competitive innings down there in Nashville before they call upon him. But another guy that we thought was going to be that first guy to help out the rotation was Robert Gasser, who's also left-handed. And it turns out he's going to end up missing several weeks because he's got a bone spur in his elbow, which does not sound fun. It sounds very painful. But yeah, Gasser is going to be unable to go for a while. And that is a big knock on my bold prediction for this season. I had a couple bold predictions. We'll get into that coming up here on the pod. But yeah, Gasser is going to be out for a bit. That's a big hit to the pitching depth that already lost quite a bit. It's already lost Wade Miley. Woodruff, we already knew, was going to be out there. But trading away Burns, I mean, the back of this rotation, like behind Peralta, I mean, you've got a rookie in D.L. Hall that's never been a big league starter before. And then you got a collection of veterans there in Junis, who split time between the rotation and the bullpen the past several years. Colin Ray, who did a really good job last year, but I mean, that was like a career year for him. Joe Ross, who hasn't pitched in the big leagues in 2 years. I mean, it's not exactly the most inspiring group behind Peralta. So there's definitely room for these young guys to come up. And Gasser, we thought, was going to be one of them. That's going to be delayed a bit. But Ashby, I think, is now in a prime spot where he can get a start or two under his belt down there in Nashville. And then when the Brewers need a sixth starter, they can call upon him to be that guy. And hopefully he can be the guy that they saw when they signed him to that 5-year contract.
Right. It not only gives them that sixth starter potential, which there's a couple long stretches here in April, which is where Pat Murphy said that we might be seeing Robert Gasser originally. Now it's, to me, it's definitely Aaron Ashby who gets first crack at that. But it also gives them insurance with a couple of guys, especially, well, actually, let's be honest, a few guys in D.L. Hall, Jacob Junis, and Joe Ross, who they're going to get chances to start, but there was always kind of that thing with those, all three of them, that you could see it working out with either the rotation or the bullpen. With Junis, he was always going to get a chance to start just purely because of the money that the Brewers signed him to. D.L. Hall, they just really want to see him as a starter. Joe Ross, I think would have started in the bullpen had it not been for Wade Miley's injury. Because I think the Brewers would have preferred to try Junis, well, DL Hall for sure. They seem to really, really like DL Hall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jacob Junis, they talked about, you know, is he an opener? Do they have an opener for him? Like all the different things they could do with him. So maybe between him and Ross, but I honestly do think Ross would have started the year as a long reliever, multi-inning type guy, had it not been for Miley's, you know, injury that kind of delayed his spring. But now you have Ashby as insurance for that's three guys that you're hoping work out exactly how you hoped they would. And yeah, Wade Miley won't be out long. But even when Miley comes back and one of those guys gets kicked to the bullpen, that's still two guys, whoever ends up being left, that you are counting on working out exactly like you planned. And if Ashby ends up looking really good down in AAA to start the season, which I know he's still coming back from injury, but the fact that he'll be going against AAA guys, I have to imagine he'll look at least pretty decent. If he looks really good and one of those guys in Hall or Junis, let's just say for argument's sake, don't, you've got the guy who can kind of try and you can try and plug in now and see what ends up happening. So it's unfortunate that what happened to Gasser happened, and the timeline is still a little unclear. They just said he'd be out multiple weeks, which could mean anything. We haven't had a lot of bone spur injuries lately, so
No.
the timeline on those were maybe not quite as familiar with unless you've done a little more digger deeping deeper digging.
There we
Words.
go.
Thank
There we
you.
go. It's been a long day. It's been
I
a
think
long
I'm
week.
catching my third cold in a month, so
Oh,
I
yeah.
which is weird because I
And
was
this
good for like
offseason
the
has gone a
entire
day
winter.
longer than we were anticipating, you know?
Yeah, so everything's just muddled. But yeah, we don't know what how long Gasser's going to be out, and so that's quite a while for Ashby to put his foot best foot forward in AAA, show that he has recovered. And if they end up needing someone, it's definitely him who's next man up. I don't see who else
Yeah.
it'd be.
And then right after that, next man up, Carlos F. Rodriguez. I think
Yes.
that's another guy that could move, that's moving up the depth chart here. Because Gasser, I think, would have been that the first of those non-40-man roster guys. Ashby, obviously, having a 40-man roster spot
Right.
would help. But Devin Williams is not yet on the 60-day injured list, so they can always open up a 40-man spot whenever they need it. And Gasser, we assume, probably would have gotten it. Now, maybe it's Carlos F. Rodriguez who steps up. You know, he's been in AAA. He's gonna be starting the year in Nashville as well. One of the crew's top pitching prospects. He could be someone that maybe steps forward and maybe is a bit of a surprise guy. We're all looking at Ashby, we're looking at Gasser. Maybe it's Rodriguez who steps up and is that you know big guy to come in and help out the starting rotation. Who knows? I had in my bold predictions Gasser and Ashby. Being the guys, just because, I mean, look, there's a lot of room for trust in that rotation. There's a lot of room for opportunities. And I think the two most trusted guys behind Freddy Peralta at the end of the year are going to be guys who aren't currently in this rotation. I just really think, you know, with how much change we're going to see in that group this year, I think our two best guys beyond Peralta, Peralta's the ace, we've seen him do it. We know what Peralta can bring. All right, he's in a class of his own in this group. But who are your two trusted guys behind him? I think by the end of the year, there are going to be two guys that are outside of this current group. And I think it's going to end up being Aaron Ashby as one of them. And you know, the bold prediction of Robert Gasser is not going so well here early on because of this bone spur. But maybe Carlos Rodriguez could step up and be that guy. I still think overall it's going to be guys that aren't currently in this rotation. If it's not Gasser, maybe it's Rodriguez.
Right. There's guys who, you know, could be like Colin Ray and kind of come out of nowhere and were that guy that
Evan
you didn't
McKendry,
expect. That's
Tobias
exactly who I was
Myers.
going to get to. Yep.
Yeah.
Evan McKendry is one who the Brewers brought in. Actually looked pretty decent, and he's been, you know, solid, I would say, for his minor league career. He's not necessarily a top prospect, but again, Colin Ray, Andrew Monasterio, guys that you do, that weren't really on anyone's radar early, were guys who stepped in for the Brewers in 2023 and made big impacts to a totally different extent, but still qualifies in that area of surprise. The Brewers end up bringing in Julio Teheran last year, and he goes on a six-start run that ends up just being incredible before things kind of finally catch up to him. But it still goes to show you that there are guys who come out of nowhere every year, multiple guys, that end up contributing and contributing well. And so, yeah, a guy like an Evan McKendry, yeah, Carlos Rodriguez, I know he's young, he's a little bit farther out than some of the other guys, but so was Jake Cousins a couple of years ago when he was started the year at Double A, and was signed as an you know, as a out of Indy League or minor league free agent. I'm trying to remember; it's been a while.
Indy League, I think. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I thought. And ends up coming in and blows everyone away for a year before, again, kind of, you know, things. He ends up getting hurt, and unfortunately, I think that's really what led to him, you know, going down a certain path. But there will be guys, there will be opportunities. There are always opportunities, either due to injuries or poor performance, which you just can't predict, that end up having to step in. The Brewers have set records basically every year for the last 3 years now of most guys to have hit the roster in a season in franchise history, which go, that's how many guys they end up having to cycle through just to get through a 162 game season.
Yeah.
So there will be guys that we are not expecting now that will end up being contributors and may or may not stick with the team. And Carlos Rodriguez, two-time Brewers minor league pitcher of the year, Carlos Rodriguez, he's got as good a chance as any to do it, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, you can't predict it. You can't predict poor performance. You can't really predict baseball. But it's not going to stop us from trying, because we still do.
That's right.
I put out my bold predictions piece, my five bold predictions. I make them every single year. And, you know, I try to, you know, change it up with how bold or what kind of predictions they are every single year. Last year's bold predictions didn't necessarily go super well, but I made five more for this year. And number one was Rhys Hoskins leading the league in home runs and winning comeback player of the year. And, you know, Rhys Hoskins has never led the league in home runs, but who knows, maybe in a first year back being healthy, maybe this is the year. Do you think that's bold? Do you think that's possible, Matt?
Comeback player of the year is probably the less bold piece of that. I think he very easily could do that. He was close to being able to come back last year, so he will be completely healthy. He hit a bunch of homers this spring. He looks good, so I don't doubt at all that he could end up doing that. Leading the league in home runs in any league is tough. And like you said, he hasn't done it before. He's been in that 30 home run range, so we know he can put a whole bunch of them up. He is hitting in American Family Field, almost said Miller.
Yeah.
American Family Field for 81 of his games this year. So he does have that adds a little bit to him. So I think that's the bold part of this, is leading the league in home runs is never easy, especially when you have friggin' four or five guys in Atlanta alone.
Yeah.
Do it.
Plus Pete Alonso.
Or Pete Alonso over in New York, or
Freddie Freeman. Shohei Ohtani's in the National League now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's tough. He's got tough competition. So that's, I think that being a twofer bold prediction, that's that you're parlaying your bold prediction number one a little bit, which makes it even tougher. But it's that first half that I think will be the tough part. But I could see him winning comeback player for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think it's going to be a good season for Hoskins. I also, in my bold predictions last year, I thought Jesse Winker was going to have a good season. So maybe he's cursed now. So who knows? But yeah, that's bold prediction number one. Rhys Hoskins is going to have a really freaking good year. I try to make these somewhat positive. You know, I don't like to be bold prediction. This guy's going to suck. You know, I don't want to end up doing that. That's a little mean. But all right. So moving on to bold prediction number two here. Trevor McGill stepping up to be the closer in Devin Williams' absence. So Williams is out for 3 months, and someone's going to need to step in to be that closer. Pat Murphy's going to go with a rotation of guys. We're likely going to see Yoel Piamps in there. We're likely going to see Ebner Uribe in there. And I think we're going to see some Trevor Megill in there as well, just with his stuff. A lot of people have the favorite being Abner Uribe to step up and take that role, but I think it's going to be Megill. I think Uribe still has some command issues. There are occasions where he just loses all command. It's not super consistent with it. I mean, sometimes he looks really great. And then, every so often, there's just one or two blow-up outings where he just cannot locate his 100-mile-an-hour fastball at all. Trevor Megill doesn't really seem to have that as much. So I think when we go through all this, which reliever is going to step up and be that guy, I think it could be Trevor Megill. Am I crazy, Matt?
Not at all. Not at all. Look at the two guys who've been the Brewers closers most recently, Devin Williams and Josh Hader. Thank you. both of those guys can really throw out some high velocity when they want to. So those are the types of guys that the Brewers really like at the very, very end. And you can go back, even farther to previous Brewers closers too, who've gotten that shot. But Trevor Megill, if there's anyone on the team who can throw heat outside of Abner Uribe, actually even more so than Abner Uribe at times, depending on the day, it's Trevor Megill. He can light it up with the best of them, and the Brewers like that when it comes to just blowing away guys in the ninth inning. I tend to agree with you that Piamps and Uribe will get the first shots, although they also talked about it being a little bit of a fireman crew. Who's going to come in and put out that fire in the ninth inning? It could be, anyone from the whole unit. But I tend to agree that those two guys will get the first shot. I think there's a good chance that Piamps holds off the rest of the guys, just being a veteran coming off the best year of his career, a guy that the Brewers trust. They seem to like having veterans in some of those more important spots. And so I could see him weighing it out, but I could also see him being better in that eighth inning, in that kind of setup support role. If Megill just blows it away and just, starts putting up, sub-1, sub-2 ERAs, even as a setup guy at some point, it's almost like, well, you've got to start working him in the ninth. And so I could see him just winning it out that way too. So I don't think that's a crazy call at all. I could see it being equally him over a guy like Piamps or Uribe.
Yeah, and we saw last year too. I mean, who is going to be that setup guy for Devin Williams? I mean, it was a rotating cast of guys. It was Matt Busch at first, until Yoel Piamps eventually took it over around midseason, and Elvis Peguero stepped up as well. Peguero could be someone who could get looks there also, but I think it's going to be Trevor Megill. So we will see how all of that turns out. I've already mentioned bold prediction number 3. Thinking that's going to be Ashby and Gasser step up to be the trusted arms in the rotation behind Peralta. I may bet 1-for-2 on that. 100%, I don't know, because Gasser's going to be up for a bit. But moving on to bold prediction number 4 here. It involves Jackson Chourio, because I had to make a bold prediction involving Jackson Chourio this year. I think he's going to struggle in April. I think he's going to struggle this first month. But then he gets red hot in May. And unlike Owen Miller, he keeps that going, and he never looks back, winning NL Rookie of the Year. It may not be super bold of me to think that Chourio is going to win Rookie of the Year. That may not be the boldest of predictions, but I feel like, that there's so much that we're all just like, he is going to instantly dominate. And I think there's going to be a little bit of time here where he struggles to adjust. But once he does, and once he gets those regular at-bats and is able to adjust, I think it's going to take off. But it may take a month or so.
Yeah, I also think that's probably the least bold of the predictions. I've seen a lot of predictions out there of Chourio.
Well, okay, here's maybe the bold part of it here, the stat line here at the end. Okay. Hitting 270 to 275. 20-plus homers, 30-plus steals. That's an aggressive rookie season for Jackson.
That is, yes, definitely. Adding that to it, that makes it a lot bolder, for sure. But I could definitely see, Chourio has at Double A and a little bit at Triple A too. He did the same thing where he struggled a little bit at the very beginning, but he adjusted very quickly to both of those levels and ended up looking Jackson Churiel-esque as ever. And so it's not a far cry to say that he might do the same thing in the majors, struggle a little bit. Heck, even this spring, he started off hot and then cooled a little bit. And Churiel was being trotted out there at the beginning. He was starting these spring games. So he was going up against other team starters. And so he got a little bit of that chance and still ended up kind of getting real hot at the end of the spring. And so that's kind of what he does. And so this would follow a lot of the trends that he's had in his career. And so I could definitely see it happening. But yeah, you're right. To be in the 270s and a 2030 guy, that'd be awfully impressive. And he'd probably run away with Rookie of the Year
Yeah.
if he did that.
Yeah, I'd hope so. I mean, he's got some competition there. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Younghoe Lee, a couple of those guys coming over from Korea and Japan. But Yamamoto has struggled early on. Younghoe Lee, I mean, he plays in Oracle Park. I mean, that place is a, friggin', it's huge. That's tough for hitters. JD Martinez didn't want to sign there because it's a horrible ballpark for hitters. So who knows? Who knows? Moving on to bold prediction number five, and this is probably the most fun one that I was most excited to write. And typically, I save the fifth one for something, end of season, postseason related. What are the Brewers going to do? My prediction for how the season ends up. Most of the time, it involves the Brewers are going to win the World Series. Hey, we're all feeling great. But every time I do that, they always lose in the first round. So going to change it up. But this is my fun one here on bold prediction number five. The Brewers eliminate the Cubs in the wild card round, finally ending their streak of first round playoff exits against the manager who was the architect of all of those first round playoff exits over the past four postseasons. No, five postseasons, 19, 20, 21, 23, four postseasons, because they missed it in 2022. But yeah, I think they're going to get past the first round. We're definitely lowering the bar here for the bold predictions, so lowering the bar for success. But if the Brewers eliminate the Cubs in the playoffs, if the Brewers are facing Craig Counsell in the playoffs and they beat him in that first round, because let's face it, they're not skipping the wild card round. They are not getting enough wins to get the bye over the winner of the NL East or the NL West, which is the Dodgers. They're not going to be getting that many wins. So they're going to be playing as in the wild card round no matter what, and they should be hosting again, I would think, as a division winner. I still think they're going to win the division, but they can host it, and I think they could be hosting it against the Cubs. And in that series, with that kind of energy, I think this time, and without Jesse Winker on the damn roster, I think they're actually going to win this time.
Man, I don't know if I'd call that a bold prediction so much as a spicy prediction.
Yeah.
Eliminating the Cubs,
Gotta add a little spice.
beating your old skipper. I mean, there would be Brewers fans who would be happier with that if that's as good as the Brewers ended up doing.
Yeah.
Happier with that than making the NLCS in
If
2018.
they lose, if they win in that wild card round, they make it to the NLDS and they get smoked by the Dodgers, we'll still consider it a success because
Oh,
one,
yeah.
you're facing the Dodgers. That's going to be tough no matter what. Even in a best of five series, whatever it is, if you get smoked by the Dodgers, hey, whatever. We won a couple of games. We eliminated Counsell on the Cubs. We win. That's success. That's going to send us going away into the offseason. Now, granted, we would all still prefer a World Series victory. We need it for Bob. We need it for Yuke. But yeah, I think a lot of us would go into the offseason happy if that ended up being the case.
Yeah, absolutely. About the only thing with your list that I'm surprised you didn't throw in there, I don't know if you consider doing it, I almost said Willie, Freddie Peralta for NL Cy Young, bold
I thought
prediction.
about it. I thought about it so much, but I don't know if I want to. Let's see, what would be the phrase here? Don't want to run the same track over and over again. Don't want to
Fair.
be a broken record. Just being like, this guy's going to want a Cy Young. This guy's going to want a Cy Young. This guy's going to want a Cy Young. You know, you got to change it up a little bit. Can't do the same thing single time. So, yeah, I did think about it, though. I did think about a Freddie Cy Young prediction, Cy Freddie. But, I mean, maybe is that your bold prediction for the season, Matt? Do you have any bold predictions that you would like to add here?
If anything, that would be my bold prediction. I've got a couple. Well, if anything, I did have, you know, I had a minor bold prediction piece the other day in a few players who could surprise Brewers fans this year. So not quite bold, but maybe watch out for these guys. I have Colin Ray as one of mine. As the spring has gone on, I've been more and more impressed with him. And I think the fact that he's now been in the Brewers system for, you know, one full year. He was in it for a little bit earlier. They've gotten more time to kind of toy with him. I think he could be more than a, you know, 4.5 ERA type guy for the Brewers. I actually have a little more confidence that he keeps things going than like a Jacob Junis or a DL Hall, really, which, you know, so I had him as one of my guys. I actually had Brian Hudson as one of them. And then I can't remember if that's – I think that was the day that they announced he was making the roster. And then Joey Ortiz. And I don't know how much necessarily of a surprise it would be that he did well, more so that, like, he could surprise people in being better than Hall, because Hall's the guy who fans are expecting to be good because he's the guy who has to replace Burns.
Right.
Ortiz – is so fantastic. He's an absolutely elite defender that if he is even above average offensively, he's going to be a guy to watch. And so I had some surprise players. If anything, if I had to do bold prediction, I'd say that that Freddie Peralta wins NL MVP. And I'm going to say, as a very random bold prediction, that Jared Koenig ends up playing a role in the bullpen.
Oh, interesting.
Late this season.
Okay.
He had a strong
pulling spring. A non-roster invitee.
He's pulling an NRI. Yep, exactly. He's a guy I'm going to keep my eye on this year. And again, looking back to it, you know, looking at the Andrew Monasterios of the world and the Colin Rays of the world, there are guys who come up out of nowhere who aren't on the 40-man roster and aren't the top prospects necessarily, that end up coming in and making an impact. And he is going to be a guy that I'm going to keep my eye on a little bit as a potential reliever contributor for the Brewers. So it's a very out of left field bold prediction, but it's one I'm going to watch.
There we go. All right. Some bold predictions from Matt. Jared Koenig pulling a name there. if I'm going to pull a non-roster invite that could contribute this year, I'm going to go Christian Arroyo.
Okay.
I believe he's sticking around down there in Nashville. So if he is, I believe he is. Yeah, he signed a minor league deal.
I think he had an opt out, but he hasn't used it. So
he is not on the opening day roster for Nashville, though.
Oh, okay.
So, and he's not someone that they would send down to Double A.
No, so, definitely not.
Okay, so maybe not Christian Arroyo. never mind. Never mind that. Just scratch that. Strike that. Don't need it. I don't think that's going to end up happening. But Isaac Collins. That's a name then.
I'll
pull him out of there. Yeah.
Nice.
Minor League Rule 5 pick a little while ago. He made the roster there in Nashville. I think he put up some good numbers last year. Maybe he could end up contributing at some point this year. So yeah. That's my name. Okay. That's my name out of left field that could come and contribute. Isaac Collins, just to kind of top off our bold predictions here, because we don't have any baseball yet, but we will. It is opening day. As you're listening to this, it's opening day, or it's now after opening day, depending on when it is you listen. But this podcast comes out on Friday morning here. And we got baseball. We got regular season baseball. Could not be more excited for it. And opening day should be a national holiday. That's just my final point.
Yep.
Got to say it. It should be. We should all get off of work for it. We also should get off of work for the first round of the NCAA tournament for March Madness. because trying to watch that while working is extremely difficult for all involved. But we make it happen. That'll do it for us. Be sure to follow us on Spotify, follow us on Twitter, Apple Podcasts, follow us wherever. We got the handles on here on video. I'm at DGasper24. Matt is at MKMatt13. Thank you for listening. Enjoy opening day. This has been the Cold Brew Podcast.